transmission of toward the light leading back to the source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and the nature of consciousness. We feature a stellar roster of special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. Our organization offers a myriad of support and resources for people who've had near-death experiences and related experiences and researchers as well. Please visit our websites, towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info, for more information about our organization, Toward the Light, and the services and support that we offer. We've got a question for all of you to ponder. Do we plan our life challenges before birth? This is a very compelling question that we are going to be discussing during this transmission of Toward the Light with the author of the brilliant and splendid book entitled Courageous Souls. Let us welcome to Toward the Light Mr. Robert Schwartz. Hello, Robert, and welcome to Toward the Light.
Thank you, Juliet. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's really wonderful to have you, and as I've posted on the blog and in other places, I've so been looking forward to having you on this show because of really the topic of your book, and it's quite stunning indeed. Why don't we start then, Robert, by your sharing with us the events that led up to the writing of this book. This is very, very interesting. And of course, when people do have challenges, and a lot of people have got more severe challenges in their life, they often question, what is the meaning by all of this? Some people will question, is God punishing me? That's a big one. And I think that with your book, you're offering great clarity to these questions. So tell us, please, about what happened to you that led to the writing of this brilliant book.
Well, Juliet, the path to writing Courageous Souls, Do We Plan Our Life Challenges Before Birth? And let me just, as an aside, say to your listeners, we do have a website at CourageousSouls.com with excerpts from the book there. The path to writing Courageous Souls started in Chicago in about 4 years ago. And at that time, I was working as a self-employed marketing and communications consultant and was very, very unfulfilled by the work that I was doing. I often say to people that I had the sense that if I fell off the face of the earth, my clients wouldn't even notice. They would just plug somebody else into my role and carry right along. But in addition to that feeling, I also had another feeling, which was that there was a higher calling or a higher purpose for my life. I just didn't know what it was, and I wasn't even sure how to go about figuring out what it was. And so, coming from a fairly conventional background, I started with conventional ways to figure out my higher calling. You know, I went to career counselors, I took that Myers-Briggs inventory, I talked to all my friends and family, and I said, what do you think I should do with my life? And invariably, they would say one of two things. They would either say they had absolutely no idea, or they would encourage me to do whatever they were doing for a living. And as you can imagine, neither of those responses was very helpful. So, almost in desperation, really, I decided to do something that, for me at that time, was a first, although now it's become commonplace, and that is I had a session with a psychic medium. And this session took place on May 7th of 2003. The reason I remember the date, Juliet, is that my life changed on that day. Now, in this session with the medium, she introduced me to the concept of spirit guides, that is, highly evolved non-physical beings with whom we plan our lives before we're born and who then guide us through our lives after we're in body. And through this medium, I was actually able to speak with my spirit guides. And they said a lot of interesting things to me that day, one of which was, they said, you planned many of your greatest challenges before you were born. And I just sort of shook my head and I said, why in the world did I do that? And then they told me, and we went on and we talked a little bit about what some of my challenges had been and why I had actually planned these things before I was born. Now, I might have been tempted to discount all of this, except that earlier in that same session, the spirit guides had said things to me to indicate that they knew literally everything about me. And I mean, they knew not only what I had done in my life, but they knew about private thoughts, private feelings that I had never shared with anybody else. And I'll give your listeners an example, because this had such a big impact on me. 5 years prior to this session with the medium, I had been going through a very difficult time in my personal life. And one day, I was home alone in the privacy of my own home, and I said a prayer to God. I didn't even say it out loud. I said it silently. And the prayer was, God, I can't get through this alone. Please send help. Now, this was 5 years earlier, alone in the privacy of my own home and silently. I had actually forgotten about this prayer, but my spirit guides knew about it, and they reminded me of it, and they said, your prayer was answered, by which they meant that additional non-physical guidance had been sent to me. So, as you can imagine, when you're talking to beings who know everything about you, including a prayer you said 5 years ago, alone, silently, in your own home, that gives them a lot of credibility.
Yes,
so
indeed.
When they went on to start talking about this concept of pre-birth planning, I was listening in rapt attention. Well, after this session with the medium was over, this information about why I had planned certain things into my life was on my mind constantly. And the effect that it had on me was that it allowed me to go back over the course of my life, review the seemingly bad things that had happened to me, and in many cases, for the very first time, see a deeper meaning or a deeper purpose to these events. And this was deeply healing for me. So I realized, Juliet, that I was onto a concept that could also bring healing to other people, and it was at that point that I decided to write Courageous Souls.
Well, this, in a needless to say, I've been so deeply moved by reading your book, and as one who's been severely, and I do quite literally mean that, challenged throughout my entire life, I so deeply resonate with what you've said in the book. And I should also let our listeners know that thanks to you, Robert, and I appreciate your generosity so much, Courageous Souls is available through Toward the Light, so people can actually purchase Courageous Souls through Toward the Light. I've got a few copies available. And I've put it on the website because this book is so beautifully written. It's just absolutely splendid in every way. So I really want to encourage people to have a look at it. And you know, we've got to continue talking about this as well, because I know that people are on the edges of their seats, as it were, asking these questions, you know, the typical why me's, why is this happening, why has this happened? So much going on, and if somehow we can ease people's minds, they're not being punished. And, you know, being a multiple NDE, it was really interesting seeing so much of what you're writing about in your book, because I saw so much of that whilst I was on the other side, as the dialogues between the spirit guides and the individuals was going on. It was just so familiar to me. So let's continue with what took place thereafter. You obviously had to find some subjects to work with. How did that come about?
Well, one of the first things that happened, Juliet, as I mentioned, I was living in Chicago, and just out of personal interest, I was attending meetings of the Chicago IONS group. I myself have not had a near-death experience, but I think the topic is fascinating. And I was going to those monthly meetings in Chicago just out of personal interest.
Yes, with Diane Willis.
That's right.
Yes.
Well, one day I contacted Diane, and I said to her, I'm thinking of writing a book about how we plan our lives before we're born. Do you have any ideas for me? And Diane said, I know someone you really need to talk to. She introduced me to a member of the Chicago IONS group, a woman, Caitlin, who actually has the ability to go into trance and channel her own soul, her higher self. So I said to Caitlin, I'm thinking of writing this book about how we plan our lives before we're born. May I interview your soul? And Caitlin said, yes, you can do that. So she and I met for a total of about 15 hours over the course of 5 meetings. And in these sessions, she went into trance, channeled her soul. And this gave me the opportunity to interview a soul directly and say, what did you plan for Caitlin's life, and why did you plan it? And her soul told me in great detail, we discussed these challenges, we chose those, and here are the reasons why. We did not choose these other challenges, and here are the reasons why. And so this 15 hours of dialogue was utterly fascinating. It confirmed and complemented the information I had received on my own in my own personal session with the medium, and it really served as the foundation for Courageous Souls. Now, shortly after that happened, I decided that I would, in fact, write the book and that I needed to somehow research people's pre-birth plans. And so I put notices on spirituality bulletin boards on the Internet stating, author, writing a book about how we plan our lives, would like to interview people who actually have memories of planning the current lifetime. And I thought, with the reach of the Internet, surely there must be people somewhere who have such memories. I'll find them, and I'll just interview them about what they remember. Well, I heard from thousands of people all over the world, and not a single one of those people remembered planning the current lifetime. They remembered past lives on Earth. They remembered past lives on other planets. They remembered non-physical incarnations. I heard fascinating stories. For example, I heard the story of a woman who recalled being an aquatic animal on what she referred to as the Blue Planet, which was a planet completely covered by water. So there were fascinating stories coming my way, but not a single person recalled planning the current lifetime. And this went on for a period of months. Finally, in desperation, I sort of metaphorically threw up my arms to the universe and I said, I need some help here. I can't research this alone. And, you know, it was within a very short time of making that statement to the universe that I was contacted by four very gifted mediums and channels who, not coincidentally, had the exact collection of skills I needed in order to research pre-birth planning. One of the people is a medium in Arizona. Her name is Stacy Wells. Stacy actually has the ability to see and hear the conversations we have with one another before we're born. So by working with Stacy, we could actually go into people's pre-birth planning sessions and eavesdrop, so to speak, on the dialogue that was taking place. And I put these conversations from the pre-birth planning sessions into Courageous Souls word for word. So it was really a fascinating glimpse behind the veil. I also worked with a medium in New York State, Corby Mitlide. Corby has a number of unique gifts, one of which is that she can channel an interviewee's higher self. So once again, this gave me the opportunity to interview souls directly and say to them, what did you plan and why did you plan it? We worked with a trans channel in Minnesota, Glenna Dietrich. Glenna generally channels angelic consciousnesses, some of whom serve as guides to people once in body. And so through Glenna, I was able to interview angels and guides directly and ask them about the pre-birth plan for that person's life. And then the fourth person is a medium in Chicago. Her name is Deb DeBari. Again, Deb has a number of different gifts, one of which is that I think she's particularly skilled at talking with the deceased. So if I was interviewing someone whose life challenge involved someone else who was now back in spirit, very often we would work with Deb. Deb would call in the deceased loved one, and I would interview them directly through Deb and say, what did you plan with this person and why did you plan it? So working with these four gifted mediums and channels combined, this allowed me to get a lot of information about people's pre-birth plans. And the format of Courageous Souls, for your listeners who are not familiar with it, is that each chapter is organized by type of life challenge. And I tried to select very common challenges because I wanted to make the book as helpful to people as possible. So there are chapters on the pre-birth planning of physical illness, having handicapped children, deafness, blindness, alcoholism, drug addiction, the death of a loved one, and severe accidents. And each interviewee, with one exception, had two and in some kind, sometimes three sessions with the different mediums and channels. And the reason for this was to sort of verify what had come up in the earlier sessions and also get more information and get a different perspective. So in some cases, an interviewee, we would talk to their soul directly, and then we might also talk to a loved one back in spirit, and then we might also go into the pre-birth planning session and then put all of this information together to get a complete picture of the person's pre-birth plan and find out why they chose certain challenges.
This also reminds me of the material that I read by Dr. Michael Newton, his book Journey of Souls, and then the second book, Destiny of Souls.
Yes.
And there was a lot of dialogue about in those books about the souls, because this is focusing on in-between lives.
Right.
Planning out their next incarnation and what have you. So that was very, very interesting. And then also a number of NDEers have brought up remembering their births and even pre-birth as well. So all of this ties in very neatly, and it's so beautifully consistent and connected. And so when I saw this, I just thought, oh, blimey, this is absolutely brilliant. And in myself, I'm legally blind, and I've been really deathly ill, especially as a child and young adult, and that's what also resulted in a number of death experiences, not near death at all, really. And interestingly, I'm not bitter about any of this. I really feel the perfection of it, even though it is, I'm going to admit, it's definitely challenging and frustrating, and sometimes I even feel some anger surfacing. But still, I realize, no, there's a perfection in all of this. And how can we explain to people that, you know, that they're not being punished? And I'm sorry for the people who are so stuck in the fundamentalist religious dogma, because they're reduced to feeling shame and guilt and, oh, I'm being punished and why me and this sort of thing. What would you say to address that?
The way to get away from the victim mentality and the punishment mentality is to understand that karma, which is one of the main reasons why we plan life challenges, is a form of karmic balancing. Karma is a neutral, impersonal law of the universe, and I like to compare it to gravity. You know, if you trip and fall, you would not say, gravity is punishing me. You would not feel angry with gravity. It would be absurd to look at it that way. In the same manner, karma is a neutral, impersonal law of the universe, just like gravity. In one of the stories in Courageous Souls, Corby Mitlide, one of the mediums, explains it a little bit differently. She says, if you have $1,000 to spend, and that's all you have, and your rent is $1,000, and you choose to spend the money on something other than rent, then you will not be able to pay the rent at the end of the month. Now, are you being punished? No. It's just that you chose to do something that resulted in a certain consequence. But it's not personal, and it's not punishment. It's simply how things work. And again, like gravity, that's how karma works. Now, it's important for your listeners to understand, karma is not the only reason why we plan life challenges before we're born. I found four major reasons why we do that. Karma is one of them, but there are three others that I'd like to mention quickly.
Thank you, please.
One of them is healing, and that is that applies in situations where there are certain energies that have been created in past lives that were not resolved or healed in the previous lifetime. And I'll give you a quick example from Courageous Souls. In the chapter on the pre-birth planning of deafness and blindness, I share the story of a young African-American woman, Penelope, who was born completely deaf in both ears. And when we went through the mediums into Penelope's pre-birth planning session, we learned that in the lifetime immediately previous to this one, Penelope had the same mother she has in this lifetime. And in that past life, when she was a young child, Penelope heard her mother shot to death by the mother's boyfriend. Now, she didn't actually witness the murder, but she was within hearing range, and she heard the gunshots that killed her mother. As you can imagine, she was quite traumatized by that, and it eventually led her to commit suicide later in that lifetime. So she returns to spirit then with what you might call an energy of unresolved trauma. And when we go into the pre-birth planning session, we hear this fascinating dialogue between Penelope and her spirit guide. And the spirit guide asks her, he says, "My dear, would you prefer to be born deaf so that no similar trauma will happen again in your upcoming lifetime, and so that you can focus on healing this energy from the last lifetime?" And Penelope says, "Yes, that is what I want and what I wish to do." So this is an example of the second major reason I found for planning life challenges, and that is healing. healing. Now, a third reason is to be of service to others. And this was something that I saw in literally every single pre-birth planning session we looked at. We heard souls talking about the desire to be of service to other people, to be of service to humanity, to be of service to the world as a whole. This is something that came up in every single pre-birth planning session. Many of your listeners will be familiar with the concept of oneness, the idea that there's really only one being in the universe, and each of us is an individualized expression of the one. As I understand it, when we are back in spirit, we have a direct perception of our oneness with each other.
Oh, absolutely. I can tell you from experience.
Well, then the way I see it, Juliet, is that this desire to be of service to others that comes up in every pre-birth planning session, I see it as a natural outgrowth of our perception of oneness. In other words, if I know that you are me, quite literally, mm-hmm. why would I not want to be of service to you? And conversely, if you know that I am you, again, quite literally, why would you not want to be of service to me? So if we were planning an incarnation together, we might very well plan challenges in which we are of service to each other. And some of these might be what people would consider, quote-unquote, negative roles, which we script beforehand because it's that kind of challenge, in some cases, that produces the growth that we're hoping to achieve.
Yes, yes.
So this is the third reason I found, the desire to be of service to each other. And then the last reason for planning life challenges, and this to my way of thinking is really the big one, is a desire to experience contrast. And what I mean is this. As I understand it, the non-physical realm that we come from is very much as it's classically portrayed. It's a place of great joy and love and peace and light. Now, I believe, and my research for Courageous Souls bears out, that we as souls are made literally from the energy of unconditional love. So if we are love and we are in a realm in which we experience only love, that means that we experience no contrast to ourselves. And from the soul's perspective, this lack of contrast means that the soul doesn't fully understand or fully appreciate what it means to be made from the energy of unconditional love. So I believe that we come here to Earth, this realm of duality, because here there's a lot of contrast to love. You know, this is a realm of duality, up and down, left and right, hot and cold, good and bad, love, and things that are not love. And so it's the contrast that I believe calls us into a remembrance of ourselves as unconditionally loving souls. This idea of contrast, I think, can better be understood if I use an analogy from a book other than my own. In one of the Conversation with God books, the idea of contrast comes up, and God asked the author, Neil Donald Walsh, to use the analogy of the white room. And the analogy goes like this. Imagine that you are a white being in a white room. So the ceiling is white, all the walls are white, the floor is white, everything in this room is white, including you. If you are such a being in such a room, how do you know that you're white? Well, the answer is you don't, and in fact you can't, until you experience something that is other than white. Then, once you've had that experience, you have a better understanding, a better appreciation of what it means to be a white being. And I think that's very much what our souls are up to here and why we plan life challenges. We are love. We are in a realm in which there is only love. And so we come here, forget who we really are, experience challenges that were set up before we were born, and these challenges call us into remembrance of ourselves as unconditionally loving beings. I think those are the four main reasons why we plan life challenges prior to incarnation.
That's such a splendid point, too, and as I was reading about it in your book, I was really animated with excitement because I've also done a lot of writing about this myself, and again, being on the other side and experiencing that unconditional love and this deep knowing that never leaves you, it makes it very easy to understand all of this. And then when we're inflicted with the amnesia, as it were, that we forget who we are and that unconditional love that really is the substance of our being. And it takes that kind of love to allow all of this other stuff to happen. And I also very much appreciate you explaining karma, because unfortunately people have had a lot of negative interpretations of karma, and, you know, I'll give you a good example. And somebody had said this to me in jest, but I thought it was rather tacky. He said, "Oh, well, are you blind in this life because you poked somebody else's eyes out in the past life or something like that?" Automatically assuming that I did something, quote-unquote, negative or bad in a previous life. And I said, it's got nothing to do with that whatsoever. And in fact, I feel that my, not only my physical disabilities, but also the severe illnesses that I've and disease that I've had to deal with have really been focused on the service to others. And when you were talking about Bob, who chose to be blind, and actually that was kind of a spontaneous, how do you call it, choice, just right after his birth into the physical plane. And it was so beautifully stated how he did pop out of his little infant body and went back to the drawing board, as it were, and said, okay, now we've got to revamp all of this and sort this out. But it was very interesting that he really wanted to, experience a life of blindness and being in service to others. And to one of the reasons was so that he wouldn't be distracted. And this is something that I have also stated. Now, mind you, I do have some vision, although I didn't for the first few years of my life. However, I had very colorful visions because I am very clairvoyant. I always have been. So for some reason, the initial total blindness did not stop me from having very vivid, colorful visions. I don't recall quite how I described them, but I could still see them on the inner planes. And even recently, you know, a lot of times my daughter would say, and my late husband would say, oh, it's a good thing that you couldn't see that, because it was, you know, either very ugly or very painful or what have you. So I felt profound gratitude for the insulation that the legal blindness, as it were, has provided me. It's kept me focused on what's really, really important, as opposed to being so readily distracted and caught up by things in the physical plane. And I also am indifferent to money, I'm indifferent to fashion, I'm indifferent to looks and stuff like that. Although, having said that, I'm also an artist, and I really do appreciate beauty. But still, the vision, and I'm talking about the higher vision now, not the vision of the eyes, that's what really is dominant, as opposed to what the physical eyes see or what have you. So I thought that that was very, very special, what you were, you know, the story of Bob. And so he was totally blind in his sojourn on this plane. How did you ultimately find these people that you interviewed? And did you travel to them and take them to the mediums? How did all of that work out?
Well, all of the sessions with the mediums, Juliet, were conducted by phone.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
As many of your listeners will know, especially if they work with mediums or channels, the work that they do involves energy. And, of course, energy is not really bounded by time or space.
Exactly. Yep.
So we had no difficulty working by phone whatsoever. As to how I found the people, there are a couple of explanations. The more superficial explanation is that they saw something that I posted on the internet, or somebody told them about this book that I was writing and referred them to me. But I think it was more than that. I believe that there was a whole team of beings in spirit who were assisting me with the writing of Courageous Souls, and I just happened to be the team member who was in body doing the typing at a computer keyboard. But I think there were members on the team who were out there bringing to me various people that would be good to interview for the book. And I actually had a number of emails from people who said, I saw your posting on the internet, and as I read it, my spirit guide said to me, it would be good for you to contact him and tell him your story. A number of people said things like that to me.
Wow. That's beautiful. Well, as a clairvoyant medium myself, most of my work is done via telephone, so I know exactly what you mean. And in fact, I even tell people, in some ways it works even better via telephone, because people can be in their own environments and relaxed and in a space that's familiar and comfortable to them. And so, you know, a number of years ago, people used to ask, oh, how can you do this by telephone? And I gave them the same explanation that you did. I said, it's energy. I don't need to see you or physically touch you, because I can tap into your essence. That's what we read, is someone's essence, not what they look like or what have you. And again, that can be a distraction. And I'm also reminded of, excuse me, a Native American, excuse me, whose name was No Eyes. She's now crossed over, and she, Mary Summer Rain wrote about her. She was very, very clairvoyant, but physically totally blind, and yet she could see like nobody's business. And she really proved how spirit really does the seeing. We see through the soul, really. And I think that that's it's a very important point, that, you know, we do have so much more perception than one might initially think. We're not just five sensory beings, we are multi-sensory beings. So as we're able to share this information that we are multi-sensory, we are interdimensional, and of course these dialogues that are in your book are so brilliant, because this is real proof of the fact that the soul is operating on these different dimensions simultaneously, and mediums as well as the individual, him or herself, are able to tap into the soul and the message of the souls, and also the spirit guides working in concert with us. Were you able to, let's see, how do I say this? When you were in dialogue with some of your subjects, were they themselves able to tap into their own soul and spirit guides, or was it just mainly through the mediums? I'm curious about this, because a lot of people are able to tap into their souls.
There are a couple of people in the book. There are 10 stories total in Courageous Souls, and there are two people in the book who had the sorts of abilities and experiences you're talking about. One of them, her name in the book is Doris, and that's the pseudonym.
Yes. Yes.
Doris is in the first chapter on the pre-birth planning of physical illness. And it's the story of a woman who plans the potential for breast cancer prior to birth. And I'll share something with you and your listeners. At the time that I was writing the book, we came up with the name Doris because the person whose story I was telling didn't want, for personal reasons, to be identified. But she has since changed her mind about that. And so Doris actually is Corby Mitlide, one of the mediums I worked with in Courageous Souls. And it's her story of breast cancer and why she planned the potential for it before she was born. Now, I mentioned earlier that she has the ability to channel an interviewee's soul. Well, she was also able to channel her own higher self. And so there's a fascinating discussion in that chapter, in Corby's story, Doris's story, where her soul tells us why the potential for breast cancer was planned before birth.
That was also very powerful.
Very powerful story. There's also a story, it's actually the last story in the book, a woman named Christina, who is clairaudient, and we have a section in there where she channels her spirit guide, Cassandra, and I interview Cassandra directly and ask her, why did she plan a particular challenge? And this is a very powerful story, because Christina, she's now in her 50s, but when she was in her 20s, she was working at a small college in Southern California. And one day she went to the basement mailboxes to retrieve her employer's mail, just as she did every day. But unbeknownst to Christina, on this particular day, someone had planted a pipe bomb in the mailbox. And so when she reached in to retrieve the mail, the pipe bomb detonated. And the force from the explosion was so great that it hurled her 10 feet back against a concrete wall. There were 6-foot splinters of wood that were shot like arrows into the wall around her. She lost two fingers, both eardrums were ruptured, and the flames from the explosion scorched her entire body. She went through intense physical pain for quite some time to come. Over the next 2 years, she had 10 reconstructive surgeries, and in her story, in Courageous Souls, we ask Cassandra, why did Christina plan this experience before she was born? And it's a fascinating story. We go into her pre-birth planning session, and we actually hear her talking to the soul who is going to plant the bomb. And she volunteers to be at the effects of the bomb explosion. The reason she does this, and we talked earlier about the theme of service to others, is that she wanted to have an incarnation in which she would be a gifted healer. And she knew that if she could heal herself from the effects of the bomb explosion, she would then be able to take all of that wisdom and knowledge about healing and turn it outward in service to others. And in fact, this is exactly what has happened in Christina's life, because after she recovered from the 10 reconstructive surgeries, she went on to get a PhD in speech-language pathology. She set up a private clinical practice, and at this point in her career, she's healed thousands of people. And she's really an extraordinarily gifted healer. She actually has the ability to go into a patient's brain energetically, by which I mean non-invasively, and restore language processing capabilities in people who have lost that due to stroke or accident. So we're talking about someone here who really is an extraordinary healer, and the only reason she can do any of this is because she was in that bomb explosion. So when I talked to Christina, she emphasized to me that not only has she forgiven the person who planted the bomb, but in fact she actually feels deeply grateful to that person. And to me, Juliet, this is really an extraordinary story, because the suffering that she went through, the physical pain, is more than most people could possibly ever imagine. And her road to recovery was so long and so arduous. Many of us would have given in to anger, resentment, and she could very well have done that too. She might have chosen to be angry for the rest of her life, to be resentful for the rest of her life. She could even have chosen to devote the rest of her life to tracking down the bomber and taking revenge. But these are not the decisions that Christina made. She chose instead to turn it around and use it as a force for good in her life. And one of the reasons she was able to do this, rather than remain angry and resentful and bitter for the rest of her life, is that shortly after the bomb explosion took place, it had the effect of opening up her psychic gifts. So she became clairaudient and started talking to her spirit guides, and they told her, you planned this. And she said, why did I do that? And then they explained what I've just shared with you about how she wanted to have an incarnation as a gifted healer. And so it was this knowledge of pre-birth planning, the knowledge that she chose it herself, that allowed her to take responsibility for it, to move out of the victim mentality, to forgive the bomber, and to actually feel deeply, deeply grateful to the person who planted the bomb. And that story, I think, illustrates the power that an awareness of pre-birth planning can have for us.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's paramount that people start to learn really how to do that. And in fact, I've mentioned this before a number of times, when something happens to me that is seemingly negative or painful, I will always ask, what is the message in this event? What can I do with it? Because I always have got an attitude that indeed there is a message, and that there's a way that I can transmute it into something positive. And because of all the experiences that I've been through, I can really see that every event that is taking place, regardless of how deeply dark and painful it may be, the light is still behind it. And I so appreciate the fact that you were pointing out that in order for us to understand what is, we've got to understand its opposite. And I thought, oh, bingo, you know, because it really is true. How can we appreciate love and light if we don't really have the opportunity to experience its opposite? So you've raised such beautiful points, you know, about how and why these different experiences happen to people. And, you know, recently I had someone on my show, Josie Barga, who's got cerebral palsy, and she's had after-death communications, and that was the theme of the show. But she also pointed out that having cerebral palsy and bilateral hearing loss, she said if she had the opportunity to change any of that, she would not, because she realizes that this has given her life richness in meaning and purpose. And another person, Blessa, who's going to be on my show on 13th July, Kathy O'Brien, this soul, this being has been through unspeakable torture in throughout her entire life, basically since she was born, at the hands of the people who are running this country. And how she was so beautifully able to transmute and triumph over all of these experiences that she's been through. And she points out that these people, what they fail to understand is the power of the human spirit and of unconditional love, because they haven't got a clue what that is. And this lady just beams and exudes love. And I tell you, she's one person who could be royally bitter if she had chosen to be, but she is not. She is a shining example of being in service to others, and I just love her tremendously. So, you know, there's so much power and beauty that is coming through these messages, these opportunities disguised as accidents and trauma and pain and handicaps and what have you. And, you know, to be sure, too, I have been victimized by ridicule and being rejected, and you pointed that out a lot as you were describing Bob's case, because he was not only blind in this physical form, but also homosexual. And, you know, I was nodding my head, even though I'm not homosexual, I am what they call asexual, which is a different orientation also. And so people have had a tendency to look at me sideways throughout my life as well. But all of this, again, has been a tremendous opportunity for me to be in service to others. And that is indeed my goal. I wanted to ask you if there were some other people in your book that you would like to share. Other really, I know they're all beautiful examples. I've certainly been enjoying reading this book so much. Maybe, why don't we address alcoholism and drug addiction a little bit, because I know that's really been a stigma for a lot of people, and people ask questions about it. They've been victim of alcoholics, abusive behavior and that sort of thing. Why don't we address that a little bit for our listeners?
I'd be happy to talk about that, Juliet. One of the reasons there is a chapter on the pre-birth planning of drug addiction and alcoholism in Courageous Souls is that I think there are certain categories of people in our society who we tend to judge very harshly.
Yes.
And drug addicts and alcoholics are two of those categories of people. I think also people with AIDS fall into that category. And that's why I have a story in the book also about someone who planned AIDS before he was born. Also the homeless, I think. I didn't write about anybody who planned homelessness, but I think so often when we see a homeless person on the street, a lot of us tend to be judgmental, and we think, why doesn't this person just, you know, pick themselves up by their bootstraps and pull themselves together? And very often these sorts of experiences, AIDS, drug addiction, alcoholism, homelessness, and many other things like that, these are experiences that the soul plans prior to birth for its own learning and growth and in service to others. So to take an example from the book, in the chapter on the pre-birth planning of drug addiction and alcoholism, I share the story of a man in Texas. His name is Pat. Pat is now in his 70s, and he started drinking when he was in his mid-teens, experienced several decades of alcoholism. And when we went into Pat's pre-birth planning session, we discovered that in the lifetime prior to this one, he had been a soldier fighting in a war, and he was literally the last man standing in a particular battle. He was roaming around this battlefield. All of his comrades were lying dead at his feet, and as you can imagine, he was in a state of great fear. Well, he was then struck by a bullet and killed, and so this energy of fear was left lingering on the earth plane. You know, fear is a very low vibration energy,
indeed.
We can't carry it back into the higher vibration, non-physical realm when we die. So So the fear is left here lingering on the earth plane.
Good point.
And when Pat has his life review, he is aware of this fact and has a motivation to heal the energy of fear that he left on the earth plane. So he comes up with a plan that I think is really quite ingenious, and that is that he selects as his future parents two people who themselves are already alcoholics, and he knows that he will inherit the tendency toward alcoholism from them. And when he gets back into his body, as I understand it, his DNA literally picks up that energy of fear that he left lingering on the earth plane in his past life. It's the fear, along with the genetics, that leads him to drink. He drinks in order to suppress the feelings of fear that he finds so uncomfortable. This causes the decades of alcoholism that he experienced. But what he also knew when he planned his life before incarnation was that eventually the alcoholism would become so painful that it would literally drive him to his knees, and he would call out to God for help. Of course, God would be there, and it would be at that point that he would take God into his heart, reestablish his spiritual connection with God, and turn his life around. And this was also part of the motivation for planning the experience of alcoholism, because Pat had had a number of previous incarnations in which he had lost his connection to God, and he wanted to have the experience of reestablishing that while in body. So he picks up this energy of fear when he reincarnates. He goes through the several decades of alcoholism. And then one day, Pat came home from work. He started drinking. He drank literally everything that was in his house. And then he fell to his knees, literally fell to his knees, called out to God for help. And Pat tells me in his interview that he sensed the presence of God there with him. He knew that God was there. And it was at that moment that he decided he would turn his life around. He checked into a rehab facility a couple of weeks later.
Now, let me interject a moment. Was this whilst he was under the influence that he called out to God?
It was, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So he checks into rehab a couple of weeks later, goes through the rehab process, and never had another drink again after that. And if you talk to him today, he's one of the most loving people you can possibly imagine, and he has a deep, deep faith and a deep, deep connection to God. And so, really, when you look at his life and the plan for his life, he's come full circle. He knew that the fear would lead to alcoholism. The alcoholism would drive him to his knees, where he would call out to God for help. He would then reestablish his spiritual connection with God, which would heal both the fear and the alcoholism. And so he's come full circle. He has healed that energy of fear that he left unresolved on the earth plane in that past life, and he has reestablished his spiritual connection with God, which he lost in several past lifetimes. This was exactly what Pat wanted to do when he planned the experience of alcoholism. And so you could look at Pat's lifetime in a very superficial sense and say he was a failure because he experienced so much alcoholism. It destroyed many of his personal relationships. It led to a couple of divorces. It led to very strained relations with all of his children. And yet, if you look beyond that very superficial sort of interpretation, you find out that this was an experience that was planned. And all of the significant people in Pat's life knew that he was going to have this experience. When we go into Pat's pre-birth planning session with medium Stacy Wells, we hear the conversation with his future wives, with his future children, and he tells them, I'm planning this experience of alcoholism, and here's why I'm doing it. I will not be as emotionally available as you might ideally like in the kind of relationship we're going to have. And then each person in turn says to him, I understand. I respect that this is what you are going to do. I still want to plan an incarnation with you, and I will use your alcoholism to foster my own personal growth. And each of them does this in very different ways. The two wives do it in their own way. There are three children, and each child does it in his or her own way. But they all know in advance about the alcoholism, and they all agree to have him as their father or as their spouse because they know that they can work with this experience and utilize it to foster their own evolution once in body.
I think this is a brilliant point that you're making, too, and I remember seeing this in a number of places in the book where you're pointing out so rightly that, you know, that lives, it's not about success or failure, and it's, I really appreciate you pointing that out, that, you know, when something seems to go awry or not the way that people might normally accept as positive or successful or what have you, that there is a profound and deep reason why these things are taking place. And, you know, I'm hoping that with the brilliant wisdom in the pages of Courageous Souls, that people can come to realize that there is a divine perfection in all of this, in all of this. And I saw it whilst on the other side myself. It was just so clearly given to me that everything is evolving exactly the way that it should, that there is perfection in all of this, even in the seeming imperfection, and that everything is in divine order, and that love is going to prevail no matter what. So I really, really appreciate this, and I think that what you have written here is so timely. Now we've got just a couple of minutes left here for this transmission of Toward the Light. What are you working on now? Do you give workshops? Are you doing any special projects centered in this work? Anything that you'd like to share in closing?
I'm doing quite a bit of public speaking, and I've been on the road for a good part of the year giving talks about why we plan challenges for ourselves before we incarnate. I'm also working on the next book about pre-birth planning, and this will be similar to Courageous Souls, but different in that it's going to examine the pre-birth planning of a different set of life challenges. And I am looking for people to interview for the next book. So if any of your listeners would like to share their personal stories, and they can do so anonymously if they prefer, they can contact me through my website at www.courageoussouls.com. There's a contact form there. Or they can just email directly to author@courageoussouls.com. But I am looking for people to interview. The other thing I'd like to mention to your listeners, and this is really so important, is that, as I've traveled around the country, I meet so many people who are in such a state of financial hardship that they tell me they cannot even buy the book, that they would like to read it, but they cannot afford it. And so one of the things that I'm trying to do, because I really want to make this information about pre-birth planning available to as many as possible, is that I encourage people, call your local library and ask the library to order the book for you. Because then, if you yourself are in a place of financial hardship, then there's no cost to you. But perhaps even more importantly, once the book is in a library, then so many people have access to it for free. And that's how this information about pre-birth planning will go into the mainstream. That's how it will become available to many, many people. And that's really what I'm trying to do in my work now.
Oh, that is wonderful. And I'd also like to invite you to, if you've got an article or summarization of some of this stuff that you would like to pass on to me, I'd be very pleased to put it on towardthelight.org. Because, again, this information is so relevant and important, it's vital that people do get hold of this information. Plus the fact that you've now got a page on towardthelight.org, towardthelight.org/robertschwartz.html, and this show will be archived and people can listen to it as well. But this is really, really wonderful information. Now, are you at liberty to tell our listeners what subjects or areas of challenges you are wanting for your next book?
Well, there are certain topics that are of personal interest to me that I have not yet found someone to interview on. I think it would be fascinating to tell the story of someone who was born into extreme poverty and find out why they chose to be born under those circumstances. So anybody who has a story like that to share, I would love to hear from them. I think another interesting kind of story to tell would be the story of someone who emigrated to this country from another country, perhaps somebody who encountered a lot of difficulty with the process of emigration or with the adjustment to living in the United States.
Oh, here I am.
Well, we can talk about that.
Oh, goodness me. Yeah, that was another one of the challenges I was thinking of that I had. There have been so many. That's very interesting. And okay, go ahead. What else would you like to offer? of some of the challenges?
Well, those are the two of the main ones that I'm looking for right now. And then I think some of the other stories that will be in the next book will be relationship-focused, stories of difficult marriages, difficult relationships with parents, between parents and children. You know, the sorts of things that are very, very common that many of us face. I would just like to make the next book as helpful to people as I possibly can.
And how about, for example, things like homelessness and even torture and abuse?
You know, if there's anyone listening that has faced those challenges and would like to share their story, I would love to include those in the next book.
Okay, and again, your email is author@CourageousSouls.com.
That's correct. There's also a contact form on the website at CourageousSouls.com.
Okay, and if you'd like to send me a little email with that request for participants, because I've got a participants wanted section on all of my sites, feel free to do that and I'll put it up, because, again, this is really powerful information. Anything else in closing you'd like to share with us?
No, I'd just like to say that I'm honored to have been on your show, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to get this information out and make it available to a lot of people.
Oh, it's such an honor, my friend. It really is, and I want to thank you so, so much. We've been speaking with Mr. Robert Schwartz, author of Courageous Souls, Do We Plan Our Life Challenges Before Birth? This is a must-read. Again, this book is available for sale through towardthelight.org, and the proceeds will support this radio show and the organization. So again, you want to check out Courageous Souls. It is a beautiful, beautiful must-read book. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. We will speak to you next week on another transmission of Toward the Light when we feature Cindy Miller. You won't want to miss it. Blessings and light to all of you. Lots of love. Be joyous, and we will speak to you next week.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.